Hey there, podcast listeners. Today's episode's a little bit of a personal rant. Sorry. I'm talking about five things that I feel critical of related to traditional psychotherapy. I say this in the episode, but I'll say it again. You know, I don't want people to not go to therapy. I want people to be really well and healthy. But I think there's some things about how therapy can happen in our culture that I get a little like worried about and critical of. So I talk about those here in this episode. Hopefully it is helpful to you and helps you to be a better consumer of psychotherapeutic services. Hey, a quick reminder that Exit Strategy, the Entrepreneur's Guide to Selling Your Business Without Regret, is now alive and well on Amazon. And it would be amazing if you would consider picking up a copy and writing a review. Amazon is fueled by reviews. So we would be very, very grateful. There's an audiobook version. Rob and I read it. It's kind of fun. There's a couple chapters where we just sort of banter back and forth. So if you're an audiobook person, you might be because you're listening to this podcast. That's an option for you as well. All right. Thanks so much for listening.
Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. This is a place where we have conversations about mental health and entrepreneurship. We have a pretty broad conceptualization of what mental health means, sometimes depression, anxiety, sometimes relationships or physical health. The goal here is to bring some calm into the crazy roller coaster of ups and downs that is life for many entrepreneurs. I'm your host. I'm Dr. Sherry Walling. I'm a clinical psychologist and an entrepreneur, married to an entrepreneur, live in the world of entrepreneurs, and I'm so pleased that you have joined us for this conversation.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Sherry Walling. I'm a clinical psychologist who focuses on the mental well-being and thriving of entrepreneurs, high performers, their families, their coworkers. I kind of live at the intersection of mental well-being and business. And one of the things that I want to talk about today is some of my feelings of frustration or gentle criticism of traditional therapy. And I want to begin by saying that if you or someone you love is struggling, you are experiencing depression, you're lonely, you need some help in your couple's relationship, by all means, participate in therapy. Find a good therapist. Commit yourself to the process. It is extraordinarily helpful and valuable for you to have a highly trained, neutral observer who is helping give you feedback in your life about ways that you can improve or be healthier, or really helping you work through some deep, painful experiences, trauma, a divorce, disruption. So I don't want a gentle criticism to discourage anyone from participating in therapy because, again, I believe in it. I am a therapist. I have trained for years. I have trained therapists. I've been sort of on every part of the process, and it is really an important institution and way of people receiving care and working towards growth in their lives. So that said, yes, therapy, pro therapy. But there are a few things that really kind of bug me about the way that psychotherapy is carried out currently in the US. And I felt like it's some things that I wanted to speak to because I don't know that people are necessarily thinking about how to be a savvy consumer of psychotherapeutic services. It is a professional service. It is a business that people are running and they're offering a service, and you want to make sure that you are getting good service and service that really serves you. So one of the things that I get worried about when it comes to therapy is that it tends toward a very pathologizing model of conceptualizing or understanding what's going on with someone. And psychologists, psychotherapists are kind of an interesting breed in the sense that many of us come up through a medical model. We use medical coding. We want and we receive reimbursement through insurance companies. We're kind of part of the medical establishment, which is super appropriate and helpful. But I think some of the ways in which we as non-medical care providers are participating in the medical system, we can feel a little bit like, I don't know, like the stepchild. So to compensate for our sense of otherness, I will say that a lot of people in the psychotherapy world almost like dive really deeply into the process of finding a diagnostic code, writing a treatment plan, like just do a hard leaning into a medical model, like a pathology model of what's happening with their clients. And this is especially true of young therapists who are kind of marinating in the DSM, which is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual. It's the book that holds all of the diagnoses that someone might give someone related to mental health. And because of the eagerness to prove that we can play right alongside the doctors and nurses, sometimes that seems to be the thing that we're looking for, like that the field of psychotherapy has sort of bought into an illness first, and your illness is the thing that is what we're trying to discover rather than the strengths that people have or rather than a growth-oriented model. And I hear this kind of out in the real world when I meet people and they're eager to tell me about their diagnoses, right? I am ASD with a side of ADHD, and like there's just this alphabet soup that can happen. And I'm really, you know, in favor of us using whatever language we need to and is helpful for us to explain ourselves and help us to get along in the world. So again, none of these things are inherently wrong, but I think it's helpful for people who are participating in therapy to recognize that the therapist is looking for their pathology. That's what they're kind of oriented toward. So I find it to be really helpful and useful to flip that model on its head and spend a lot of time looking for strengths. A lot of time looking for the parts of someone that we don't want to inhibit, but we want to make bigger. We want to help shine brighter. We want them to be better able to utilize in their lives. And I think the coaching work that I do with entrepreneurs and high performers, people don't want to be told that they're broken. They want to find ways to live really well in the world in which they find themselves. And so orienting towards pathology doesn't always serve that goal very effectively. Another thing, another criticism that I have of traditional therapy, frankly, it just takes too long. Those of you who followed my work for any period of time know that I am very interested in the use of psychedelic-supported psychotherapy, and the primary reason for that is because it's faster. It helps people get to a place of growth that is both embodied, like living in their bodies, and insight-oriented, so living in their minds. And psychotherapy, traditional psychotherapy, really addresses the cognitive or the conceptual piece of how we see the world, doesn't do much for the physiological ways in which our body holds our hurts or has encoded our patterns. But psychotherapy can take a long time for change to be affected. And it's not anybody's fault. Even a really good therapist, especially actually a good therapist, is going to go slow and really open up a foundation. We don't want to be fast and sloppy when we are working on the frameworks of our personhood. We want to be careful and diligent. But, you know, I think especially for people who are really suffering, the course of therapy just takes too long. Many of you may know that I lost my brother to suicide in 2019, and he had been in treatment for about 18 months prior to his death. And the kind of treatment that was available to him, you know, once a week for an hour, it just wasn't intense enough, and it wasn't fast enough, and it wasn't effective enough. And so that's where I am a bit agitated about how long traditional talk therapy takes. The third thing that I struggle with related to traditional psychotherapy is really a product of being in the middle of a therapeutic process, but it in the raising awareness about pathology, it can shine a light on all of your hurts. And this is, again, not a bad thing. It's helpful to know where the hurts lie, where you've been injured by the dynamic with your parents or feeling inferior to your siblings or that first early heartbreak really left scars on you. It's really important to know where those hurts are. But I think when people are in the midst of therapy and they are really aware of the map of hurt, they can almost be like hypersensitive or hyper aware. I hear the phrase a lot in the culture around me, like, oh, it's just triggering for me. That kind of language is triggering, or that kind of reminder is triggering. And I came up as a therapist in the PTSD world, and I understand what triggers are. Triggers are an experience, an exposure to something that just catapults you back to a traumatic experience where your mind and your body are feeling as if the trauma is happening again. So the hyper or the like overuse of that term, basically the fragility to something that is upsetting, is just not a sustainable way to walk in the world. And I think that therapists run the risk of, again, giving people kind of this detailed map of every hurt that they have and how all of those hurts are exacerbated by the relationships that we're in and the lives that we're in and the jobs that we're in and the challenges that we have in our world. And the map of the hurts is not sufficient. The map of the hurts just means that we walk around hyper aware of all of our hurt all the time, and that we are sensitive and that we are fragile. The point in knowing what has hurt you is in developing resilience. It's developing the skills to navigate those hurts, to address them, to be present to them without getting body snatched into an earlier version of yourself. So be really careful with being in a therapeutic process where the clinician is really oriented towards empathizing with everything that's wrong and solidifying your hurts into monuments that you must traverse around in your life. Your hurts should ease. Your hurts should become more accessible, not less. You should have more bandwidth to tolerate difficult conversations or difficult interactions with people in your family, not an urgency of saying, this is triggering me or this is upsetting me and I just need to throw up a boundary and go. Obviously, this is all with some moderation, but this kind of brings me to my fourth point, which is if not done well, therapy can really, really make people very selfish, like really validating your unique individual experience without placing it in a larger context of your relationships and your responsibilities to the people around you. It can put you very much in the center of your world. And yes, of course you are. And your reality is the reality that matters to your life. But we want to engage in healing that does more than give us empathy for ourselves. We want to have an abundance of empathy for ourselves so that we can also have empathy for others. So that it doesn't stop with us, with our healing, but that our healing kind of leaks over into our relationships and we have more bandwidth, more kindness. So again, when we work with psychotherapists who are a bit immature in their frameworks, what they might aim to do is really help their clients feel heard and validated. And that is a wonderful starting point, but it is not the destination. It is not the place that you want to land after spending a lot of time and energy and resource in a therapeutic process. You want to grow your capacity. You want to grow your strength, not only for your own benefit, but for everyone that you are in relationship with. So you being more committed to seeing the world the way that you see it might feel better to you, but it is not functionally better for you or for the world. There are obviously limits to what I'm saying. I do believe that people need to have boundaries and be able to stick up for themselves and free themselves from pathological relationship patterns. But we want to do that on purpose. We want to do it because we see the playing field of our lives really clearly, not because we are so grounded in our own perception and perspective that we force everything around us to adhere to that. So, you know, obviously I'm feeling a little critical of some psychotherapy processes. I think the last thing that I will say that I feel sometimes hesitant or frustrated about around the process of psychotherapy is I struggle a bit with the blank slate phenomenon. In a therapeutic process, traditionally or generally speaking, the therapist is fairly separate. They have a pretty firm boundary between their personal lives, who they are, and the clients that they serve. And there are many, many very good reasons for this. If nothing else, that the time in therapy is about the client. It is not about the therapist. It is not about the therapist talking about their life or catching the client up on, you know, the details of happenings and goings on. That's super not appropriate for lots of reasons. But I think increasingly for me, I want to be mentored and developed by people who have been in the arena, who have done the things that I want to do, who have lived some life, who have raised kids, who have written books, who have like been present in the world, not just in an academic or intellectual way. Sometimes I've seen people try to lead or mentor others in a therapeutic way in things that they just don't have a lived experience of. And we can go too far from this. I do think that clinicians, coaches, consultants can be very effective at helping people work through things that they haven't been through. It's not that the person who you're working with needs to have all of the life experiences that you have. But at least for me, I just want people who have more than an academic or intellectual knowing of what it means to be human, who have really done their work. And in most traditional therapeutic relationships, it's sort of hard to know if the clinician has really done their work. So that's a thing that we just want to pay really close attention to and make sure that we're opening our hearts and minds to people who are really worthy of holding them with us, not just people who went to school. And again, I went to a lot of schools, so I get it. I understand how much discipline and learning and development happens in a graduate program in psychology. And I don't disparage that. In fact, I also don't trust people who don't go to school. So I'm just critical either way. But the point is that when you enter a therapeutic process, be clear about what you want the outcomes to be, what you want to feel different, how you want to show up differently in your life. And do your best to have a feedback loop or to communicate with the person that you're working with so that they are really aligned in those goals, that they are reflecting your relationship values, they're reflecting your entrepreneurial or creative values. They are not just pouring flames and fuel on all of your hurts and making you feel, frankly, sort of justified in your maybe questionable behavior. Any kind of personal growth and development is going to be challenging. And there will be many moments of being messy in the middle where you won't have it landed. Well, you'll be mid-process and you will be hyper aware of all of your hurts, or you will be having a deep knowledge of your pathology, your diagnoses, and how they might be shaping the way that you show up in your life. But just make sure that you're not lingering there and you're not working with someone who is content to let you linger there. If you have curiosity about working with a team that has a lot of training and mental health experience and also a very deep perspective about what we're doing when we are coming alongside and helping people thrive, feel free to reach out to me or to my team. This is what we do. And once again, just reiterating, like, therapy is a really great tool. Just make sure that you use it well, that you are a healthy consumer of psychotherapeutic processes. All right, thanks so much for watching, listening, participating, and take good care.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of the podcast. In the meantime, feel free to check out zenfounder.com for lots of resources about the kinds of conversations that we have on the podcast. You can get information about working with me, about maybe joining a Zen tribe. It's sort of like a mental health boot camp for entrepreneurs. We also have lots of content on our blog, links to resources in our courses and books for sale. So check us out there, and we hope to provide anything and everything that you might need to make the entrepreneurial life a little bit easier.